Okay, so I want to discuss a little bit the back and forth between the Goyim and the two center of power really in Babel, which was the Reish Galusa and the Goyim, and they're both quite powerful religiously as well as politically. We know the Goyim obviously had religious power over the nation. They appointed all the dayanim. Anything had to, they made all types of enactments, takanas. Religiously, they were the heads. They also had power financially because they had the right to levy taxes, at least collect taxes from their domains. That was the Goyim. At the same time, there was the Reish Galusa. The Reish Galusa, of course, was the official Jewish representative on behalf of the Jewish people for the Caliph, for the Arab ruler. And to that role, he was obviously able to, he had a little army, and he had, not an army, more like a royal guard. And he would walk out, and he almost like, almost like a king, he would act. The Reish Galusa came from descendants of Zerubbabel, of Malchus Beis David. Not just he had the right to appoint, to levy taxes, but if he needed more money, he can levy more taxes. In other words, he was like a king. He was in charge of the social fabric, and he was the representative to the Arab ruler. Not only that, but he was technically in charge of the appointment of the Goyim, which means, it had to meet his approval. In a way, he was higher than the Goyim, that any time there was a Goyim was nifter, either in Sura or in Pumbedisa, it had to be rubber stamped by him. And most times, all they did was rubber stamped it. Many times they were scholars, they were Talmid Chachamim, but they just rubber stamped it because the Goyim knew best and they okayed it. It wasn't never, not often it was an issue. Until the one time that it was an issue, or the few times that it was an issue. The one after the beginning of the Arab conquest, the first of the Reish Galusas was a fellow by the name of Bus Tanoi. And he was, there was the one with the dream. By the end, he became the Reish Galusa. He was miraculously saved, the whole story, in his mother womb. But at the end, he was appointed Reish Galusa. And then his descendants became the Reish Galusa for the next few hundred years, until the end of the Gaonic period. Like I said, mostly they just rubber stamped. Yeah, they had their tax collecting, but they worked well with the Goyim. They were more the religious leaders, and they were more the political leaders, social, political leaders. Even though technically the Reish Galusa was above and he was in charge, he mostly went along. Every now and then you had Reish Galusas that did wield power. For example, Bus Tanai's grandson, his son was Chasdoi, was also a very scholar, Talmud Chacham, everything. His grandson was Shlomo ben Chasdoi. He was the Reish Galusa for 30 years, from the year 730 to the year 760. And he got involved. He got involved in appointing Goyim. He was not happy about the Goyim that was going to be chosen in Sura. So he imported somebody from Pumbedisa. And he said, "You'll be the Goyim in Sura." Pumbedisa was in the north, Sura was in the south. Two different cultures, two different mesiftas, two different yeshivas. He said, "No, I'm appointing, taking somebody from Pumbedisa and appointing him in Sura." Not only that, he didn't like somebody in Pumbedisa who they was going to be the next favorite to be the Goyim. He was the number two man, Rav Achai. He said, "No, I'm not approving him. I'm not taking him." He instead took Rav Achai's student, and Rav Achai went to Eretz Yisrael, where he wrote the famous Shiltas de Rav Achai Goyim. So Shlomo ben Chasdoi was a, powerful and influential, he got involved, Reish Galusa. You look in number one, Igeges Rav Shchira Goyim, Achav Mashmul Yutches Shonim. He talks about who the various Goyim were. 18 years he was in Pumbedisa Hayo. He says that the next Goyim was Shmuel, and he was from the grand descendants of Amemar Damara. V'aviv Shal Mashmuel Zeh, the father of Mashmuel the Goyim, Hayo Benoy Shal Ma'arava Goyim, Shekustav Nishu Goyim BePumbedisa. In other words, this Mashmuel was the grandson of a previous Goyim in Pumbedisa. And this Rava Or Mar Rav Goin was at the same time with Rav Huna in Sura. He was in Pumbedisa. Now, what happened? How did Mar Shmuel get appointed, even though he was Pumbedisa, how did he get appointed in Sura, in the south? Since nobody in Sura, Masa Machse, which is Sura, was as great as Mar Shmuel, Shakle Shlomo Bar Chazdoi, Reish Gelusa, so Shlomo, son of Chazdoi, the Reish Gelusa, took him from Pumbedisa, Umanye b'Masa Machse, and he pointed him in Sura, b'Chochem Gadol Hayu, u'B'noi b'Pumbedisa Ave. In other words, even though he came from Pumbedisa, he pointed him in Sura. Who did that? Not the people in Sura, not the Gaonim, not the number two or three people in Sura, but rather Shlomo ben Chazdoi, the Reish Gelusa, he appointed him from Pumbedisa into Sura. Another one that he appointed in Sura from Pumbedisa was Rav Yehudoi Goin. The famous Rav Yehudoi Goin also came originally from Pumbedisa. Look at number three, number 1a. Ubasrei Mar Rav Yehudoi Mar Mar Rav Nachman Gimel Shana Mechza Vuhunami Mipumbedisa. He also came from Pumbedisa. V'lo have a man amavlik b'chuch b'chachme b'sura kavasei. There was nobody as great as him in Sura. So Afunami, him as well. Shakle Shloima Nisio, Shlomo the Nasi Ben Chazdoi took him, Umanye Lahosam Umoyenaim Have. And he appointed him in Sura. Not only that, when Rav Yehudoi Goin was appointed Goin in Sura, his brother was the Goin in Pumbedisa. He had two brothers, one in Sura, one in Pumbedisa, appointed by Rav by Shlomo Ben Chazdoi.
So, the learning is not that he didn't see it, it's because there was nobody that's great.
I know.
So if nobody great, that doesn't mean he's doing it for a bad reason.
Didn't say for a bad reason. In the eyes of Shlomo ben Chazdoi, there was nobody as great.
This is talking about Rav Shira Goin famous.
Okay. There was nobody as great. If Shlomo ben Chazdoi decided, okay, there's nobody as great, and I'm pointing him. Doesn't it say, clearly he got involved, right? I'm not saying in a bad way.
Getting involved is one thing. Getting involved because...
Not in a bad way. He felt he was nobody as good and he brought him in. Could be there was nobody as good. Right? If Shira Goin says there was nobody as good, that's fine. But he had to import him from Pumbedisa, which even Rav Shira Goin points out was not the norm.
But it wasn't. But in those days, this is the early times now.
In the 700s.
So mid Goin period, they weren't going back and forth as a standard rule.
Maybe yes. Not as much as by the Amoraim. Amoraim, we know they went back and forth all the time. Right? Abaye, Rava, the Talmidim, Rav, he learned by Rav, he learned by Shmuel, back and forth. Here was more the two Masiftas, Sura and Pumbedisa. None of that. The Goinim were in charge of the territories that came along with it, with the taxes. So I don't know if they necessarily went back and forth as much. Don't know if that's true. You know, I'm not saying in a bad way, but clearly Shlomo ben Chazdoi got involved, and that was fine. There's nothing wrong with it, but he got involved. In other words, even though he was a Reish Gelusa, he didn't necessarily rubber stamp everything. He said, okay, there's nobody that's good. I'm bringing in somebody from Pumbedisa, which is fine, but that's one thing that we see that the Reish Gelusa got involved in the appointment of the Goinim. How about the opposite? Do we ever have Goinim that don't like Reish Gelusas and say, we're not letting this happen?
The Gemara has it. The Gemara talks about it all the time.
That Goinim stopped Reish Gelusas?
90% of the time, it's the Rabbanim went to the Reish Gelusa as a show of cover.
Correct. No.
There are 10% of the time that you have all of a sudden that they have a little bit of an argument.
They have an argument. Okay, so do we have... Now, the truth like this. The truth is, the Reish Gelusa, right, was a government job, right? And it was appointed, I suppose, by the caliph, or they chose themselves, and the caliph okayed it. But the caliph wanted the Goinim to okay it as well, because he needed the Reish Gelusa to be representative of the people. So even though the Reish Gelusa technically was above the Goinim, but it was always done by haskamas of the Goinim, because the caliph is not going to have somebody who the rabbis are going to be against, clearly. Right? So at least by the appointment, it has to be with the agreement of the Goinim.
What's the caliph care?
The caliph care? Because what do you mean? That's his representative. Part of the taxes come to him. Do you want to have the Jewish representative that is infighting the Jewish people? That's not how you run a country.
The best thing you want is them to...
I mean, you don't want them to... No, you don't want him infighting, clearly not. He has to collect taxes from them. He wants quiet. He wants somebody to speak to if something needs to be done. If he wants to raise taxes, he doesn't have that the Reish Galusa says something and they're going to say not like that, and then there's unrest, and then he doesn't get anything done. So clearly, it's in his interest that the Goyim are okay with it as well. And for the most part, the Goyim did not get involved until the time they got involved. And one of the times they got involved, it had a massive, massive consequences to the Jewish people. And that's the following case.
Is this the time when they're not doing it by family anymore? They've gone out of that already?
The Reish Galusa was done by family. It was done by family. The question is, which part of the family? Do you skip a generation? Do you choose a nephew? Was always done by family. Matter of fact, we'll discuss it next week. Bustanai, the original one, so when the Arab conquest, the Omar, Caliph Omar, took over in the year 630, so he part of the spoils of war is that he conquered the Persian king, and he took the Persian princess, and he gave her as a gift to the Reish Galusa. And he married this Persian princess, the Reish Galusa, and he had children with her.
That was part of the problem.
And that was a whole issue. Well, are these children legitimate? Are they Eved Kanani? Are they Jews? Are their descendants able and befitting to become Reish Galusa? That, we're going to see that. That's going to develop 50 years later. But the first time they got involved was over here. Shlomo ben Chasdoi was Nifter, right? So Shlomo ben Chasdoi was Nifter. Who was going to take over after Shlomo ben Chasdoi? So Shlomo ben Chasdoi had a son. Shlomo had a son, ben Chasdoi. He was the powerful Reish Galusa, and he had a son. His oldest son was Anan. Bright, talented, wealthy, Talmud Chacham, everything. And he had a second son. And the Goyim did not like the oldest son. Look what the Ravid writes in Sefer Kabbalah. This is in the year 760. So look over here. Bois Hashana, V'achav Rav Yudoi Goyin, Gimel Shana Mechzer, that's this time period, right after Shlomo ben Chasdoi appointed Rav Yudoi Goyin, as we just saw in number one. Umeitz B'shnas Dal Lofim Tov Kuf Chav Gimel, V'hu Chavar Hilchot Psukos, right? As a matter of fact, Rav Yudoi Goyin was the first one to write a halachic book. Halachis Psukos. Afterwards, Halachis Gedolos. The first halachic book, not the Gemara, but a book of halachas was written by Rav Yudoi Goyin, who was handpicked by Shlomo ben Chasdoi. Good choice. He chose Rav Yudoi Goyin from Pumbedisa to go down to Surah, and he wrote this great book, the magnum opus, Halachis Psukos, which is the first of the halachic books. Afterwards, we have Halachis Gedolos, then we have obviously the Rishayim, the Rambam, but the first halachic codified book that is a book, a sefer just on halachas, is the sefer from Rav Yudoi Goyin, appointed by Shlomo ben Chasdoi. So he had a good choice when he chose Rav Yudoi Goyin. Rav Yudoi Goyin was from the most famous Goyinim, Rav Yudoi Goyin, in the 730s, when it was in 757, I think, 757 to 761. 3 years. So clearly, he was a good choice, right? He was blind. Okay, now, after Shlomo ben Chasdoi was Nifter, read how he says it. Uvayamov, in his day and age, in other words, the son of Shlomo ben Chasdoi, Hayo Anan, Vishol Benoi, there was his son Anan, and his son, grandson Shol, I mean Anan had a son Shol, Shin Reish Yud, what does that mean? What does Shin Reish Yud mean? See what it says over there? Mati, see what it says, Shin Reish? Shem Rishoyim Yerkov, may the name of evil people rot. That's what he writes about then. Now, Va'anan Zeh, what he writes?
This might be the first time I've ever seen that.
Yeah, that, well, Va'anan Zeh, and this Anan, the son of Shlomo ben Chasdoi, the one who appointed Rav Yudoi Goyin, right? The next in line to become the Reish Galusa. Anan Zeh, mi Beis Tzur Hayo, I think that means he was from Beis Tzur, but he was from, you know, maybe it means he was from the solid family. He was the son of Shlomo Chasdoi. V'tamet Chacham Hayo, b'tchila. He was a great Tamet Chacham in the beginning. V'hikiru boy, and they recognized the Goyinim of Tzura and Pumbedisa, recognizing him, Shemetz Psul. There's something off with him. There's something off with him. his shittas a little bit off. Mipnei Kain, and because of this, Loi Nismach Legoin, they never appointed him. I mean, he was the caliber to become a goin. They never gave him smicha as a goin, not as a reish mesifta. Clearly, not, but not even as a goin. The gam loy siyu min hashemayim liyos reish galus, and they didn't even succeed to become reish galusa. Matter of fact, what happened was is that they overlooked the goinim. Said, we don't agree to Anam, the son of Shlomo ben Chasdoi, the great reish galusa for 30 years. Who was involved, and he appointed various goyim. You know, he got from Pumbedis and involved with Rav Yudai goyim. His son, Anan, we don't want him to become the Reish Galusa. We want his brother, his younger brother, to become the Reish Galusa. We don't like the Shitas of Anan. So what happened was like this. So Anan says, who are the rabbis to tell me that I cannot become Reish Galusa? So what he did was, he proclaimed, he had his followers, he proclaimed himself Reish Galusa, in opposition to the Goinim. What happens if you proclaim yourself Reish Galusa in opposition to the Goinim? What does the Caliph say? The Caliph says, wait a second, this is a government job. The Goinim want your brother. Who are you to proclaim yourself Reish Galusa? Put him in jail. The Caliph put Anan in jail. Not only that, he put him in jail on a Sunday morning. He said, this week I'm sitting on the judgment because you're Moirid B'Malchus. You're proclaiming yourself another king, no such thing, and Friday you're going to be hanged. That was the psak din. He said, I'm going to sit on the case, and that's what's going to happen. Now look what he writes. Ubnei hatina shahoitza b'liboy, and because of the hatred that he had, that he was overlooked by the goyim, helso siltoin, he brought up, siltoin, like a cancer, v'omad lahasis Yisrael, and he went and he became a mesis umediach. He became an instigator. Me'al kabolas chachamim pi anaviim, edim kshirim pi eit kshirim, k'moy shesida b'sefer zeh. In other words, he went against the entire tradition and mesorah of the Jewish people that we have tradition all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. V'nase zokein mamre al pi bezdin, and he became a zokein mamre, a koifer be'ikar, levilti Shmoya el Hashayftim, not to listen. He told people, don't listen to the rabbis. V'chibe esforim, and he wrote books. V'hemi talmidim, and he had talmidim. Uvodim eliboy chukim loytoivim, and he made up new types of laws. Ki acha churban edadlo haminim atrom anan v'chaskam. Because after the churban, the tznukim and the minim nidaldalu, they became less and they diminished, until Anan, this person over here, was supposed to be a goyim. But the rabbi said, no, he has funny shittas, we're not putting him a goyim. Supposed to become Reish Galusa, they overlooked him. And because of that, he went off the derech, and he made a whole new book of laws and svarim. That's all he tells us. What's the story behind it? That's what he writes. The story behind it is, he proclaimed himself to become Reish Galusa in the year, I think, 760, I think 769, he proclaimed himself, I'm the next Reish Galusa, after his brother was appointed by the Gaonim, because they overlooked him. The king, the sultan, the caliph said, you can't be two Reish Galusas, you're going to jail. Sunday morning, you put him in jail. Friday, he's supposed to get hanged. Wednesday, or in between, there's a court in front of the caliph. Let me hear what you have to say. He sits in jail, Anan sits in jail, with a fellow called Ibn Hanifa, who was the founder, who was also in jail, because he tried to have change Islam. He tried to be open some type of, was one of the great four imams, and he tried to have a Sunni type of, I don't think he's the head of the Sunni, he's the head of the Sunni Hanifa, what's it called? It's called the Sunni Hanafi Muslims. This guy, Ibn Hanifa, he meets him in jail, who, by the way, never made out of jail. He died in jail because he was, he tried to be heretic, tried to have a different form of Islam. But he meets him in jail. They're both there, condemned. And he tells him, he gives him good advice. He said, listen to me. You're not going to win in front of the caliph. Because he doesn't like this business, having a new Reish Galusa and having a different, that's not going to work. Let me give you good advice. Get up there when you go in front of the king, in front of the sultan, in front of the caliph, and tell them that your Reish Galusa
because you're not part of the Jewish religion. You have a different religion, and that's where you get a Reish Galus of. You're a smart man. Explain him that you're in charge of a different religion. This Hanifa, Ibn Hanifa, who also tried to change Islam, he tells Anan, the son of Shlomo ben Chasdoi, who did so much. I'm not saying he did a bad thing. He did so much. He brought the right Goyim in, but his own son, who was overlooked, he says, you become in charge of a new religion, and that's what you need to tell the Khalif. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. A few days later, he had the court case with the Khalif, and he gets up and he says, why are you becoming Reish Galusa? He said, no, I represent a different religion. We're not with the rabbis. The rabbis have their interpretation of the religion. I represent a different religion, the true B'nai Mikra, with a true Mosaic religion, and that's why I'm Reish Galusa. I'm not with them. Look what it writes in Wikipedia. He was arrested by the authorities on Sunday in 767. One Sunday in 767, thrown into prison to be executed on the ensuing Friday as guilty of high treason. Luckily for Anand, the story goes, he met in jail a prominent fellow prisoner, the founder of the Muslim Qasidistic school of the Hanifites, Abu Hanifa, Al-Nu'uman ibn Thabit. He gave Anand ben David advice which saved his life. Maybe it was a grandson, actually. Anand ben David, I'm not sure. I think it was a son of Shlomo ben Chasdoi. Maybe it was a grandson. It might have been a son, because ben David just maybe means, you know, maybe it was a grandson. I'm not sure. Anand was to declare that his religion was different from rabbinical Judaism, and his followers entirely coincided with him in matters of religious doctrine, which was an easy matter for Anand to say, because the majority of his followers were opposed to the rabbis. Complying with his advice, Anand defended himself in the presence of the Caliph al-Mansur. He liked it. Granted his favor. He said, done! Deal! You can become the new Reish Galusa of this new group of people who are not following the rabbinic Judaism and the rabbis. And Anand ben David was granted, got to stay, he became the new Reish Galusa of this ulterior or alternative sect of the Jews in Babel. Now, questions. First of all, who are these people that were following him? I thought Babel was all good and rosy and fine and good. So who are these people following him, right, that had to go along with him? You can't just say, I'm Reish Galusa for nobody. So obviously there were people that went along with him. Why were there people that went along with him? And I think the reason to that is, the Rambam already writes, and the Tshuva Sagrenim and other places write that as well, that, you know, the Rambam writes in the Geras Teiman, that he writes to the Jews in Teiman about the false messiahs. So he says, in the beginning of the Arab conquest, there were people going around saying that they're the Messiah. Remember we spoke about last time that there was, you know, the Byzantine Empire fell apart and the Jews thought now they can build a base to make this. And you had all these different false messiahs going around. Abu Sharia was one of them. There were a few of them. And they had adherents, they had followers. There were already people, Jews, right? The Gemara says in Kedushin that Bavel, that's the pure part. But, you know, Meshan, that's the bad Jews, the not miyuchasim. And Madai is there. And Elam is kacha. Meaning, Babel proper, within the confines of Babel, yeah, that's where you had the Jews, they followed the Goyim 100%. But the outlying areas, not necessarily. Look in the Rambam number 4. Yesh lechem nadas, ki betchilas malchus Yishmael, omad ish, in the year 660, Amad Ish Be'eva Anar, on the other side of the river, which is in Babel, V'amashu Mashiach, V'yotze B'chlal Aseres Alofim Yisrael. And 10,000 Jews followed him. V'yoy Shaloi Shalon Mitzayra V'ishkin Bori. He was able to cure the sick. V'loi Nishlam Asoka V'lam Datzosoi. At the end, it didn't follow through. V'choz V'nishasol Acha Bori Aspin Be'etzem Agolus. V'ishchatro Aleim B'glolo Tzoros. And a lot of Tzoros came to the Jewish people, because they followed him. But you had people following, and that's what the Rambam says in number 4, that's what it says in Wikipedia. Abu Isa believed that he was the last of the 5 heralds from God, announcing the imminent arrival of the Messiah. Then he claimed to be the Messiah himself. His followers felt he would return after death, bring the end times. He made some minor alterations to the general set of rabbinic laws, and they became ascetic in their matters. The most radical of these Sawite believers accepted both Jesus and Muhammad as true prophets, but only to their own peoples. Other alterations included banning of the consumption of wine and meat at certain times, sunnah prayers of 7 to 10 depending on the source, meaning 10 tefillahs a day, affirmation of the Shammai stands on divorce, which means we didn't really leave Judaism, but we're not interpreting it the way the rabbis are interpreting. Alternative ways of Judaism, practicing Judaism, not the way the rabbis the Amoraim and the Tanoim and Amoraim and the Goyim taught us, that existed in Bavel as well. The Rambam says it existed. We know it existed. Right? And number three, he talks about, you know, all these Jews that are not really going off the Derech, but they have their own laws and their own things, and they don't believe in Gittin and Kedushim, and they don't make a Shechita. That's number three. So these things existed. So you want to know who he can be the exilarch, the Reish Galus over? There were not a small amount of disenfranchised Jews that, you know, it's one thing if they're not religious and they adhere to the Goyim, these are leaders, these are rabbis, that's fine. But they had alternate sects as well in Bavel. And he became the Reish Galusa of these people. Now, not just he became the Reish Galusa of these people, but he had to develop a religion. Because, after all, what does he become Reish Galusa of, right? It's not Rabbinic Judaism, it's something else. So this Anan ben David, is known as one of the founders of the Karaites. The Karaites, which became a very strong sect in Bavel, they're an offshoot from the original Tzedukim. But like the Ravid writes, Sefer Kabbalah LaRavid, he writes that, you know, the Tzedukim and the Minim, what's the Minim? The people that didn't adhere to Rabbinic Judaism, they nidaldalu, they diminished after the Churban. We don't hear much from them. Right, the Tzedukim fell apart. We know the reason why. Jewish history back then is because the Beis Hamikdash was the source of all the wealth. Disappeared, so all these people disappeared. There was nothing left for them to get involved in. So therefore they diminished, those groups diminished. But there was still a core there. There were these disenfranchised Jews. There were Jews that were looking for other things. They weren't happy with the rabbis. Other sects. Comes along Anan, and he breathes life into the Tzeduki movement, in the sense that, why are we following the rabbis? We are B'nai Mikra. We follow the Torah. We have Moshe Rabbeinu. We have, you know, the Torah as it's written. The rabbis distorted it. The rabbis made their own laws. We're not following the Amoraim and the Tanaim and all the Torah Shabbat that all the Jews have been following all these years. No. We are the true Jews, and he developed the Karaite religion. And this Anan ben David didn't just develop the Karaite religion, but he wrote a sefer. Right? The Ravid writes over here, the Chiber Svarim, and he wrote books. He wrote Svarim. Svarim, like the Gemara, Lahavdil Alfi Avdalis, but like the Gemara, with Drush, and Hekesh, and Lumdus, everything he wrote up. Remember, he was supposed to be, he was a scholar, like the big guy name he was. He was overlooked, and that's what he wrote. As a matter of fact, he wrote a book called, look at number 7, Misefer HaMitzvus La'anan HaNasi. I added in Shin Resh Yud. I took the liberty from the Ravid as well. And he wrote it in Aramaic, and it's translated in Hebrew. Now this book, anything I was able to find it, I went to Yitzhak Chachma, couldn't find it, obviously. It's not a book. It's a kfira, right? It's heresy.
They do have a book, though. They do have a sefer.
Yeah, well, where am I going to find it? I went online, tried to find it, couldn't find it. Then I went online, and I got the entire... Yeah, Hebrew book doesn't have it.
Hebrew University.
They have an entire book that was put out by Hermachi or in the 1903 in Russia, St. Petersburg. That's where they put it, all the Maskilin. They put it out over there. And they had it online, and I couldn't print it, but I can download it. So I downloaded it. You know, usually when you're on a computer, they want to make sure you're not a robot. They asked me 4 different times to make sure I'm not a robot, until they finally let me have it, and I downloaded the entire thing, and I was able to print it. Just to show you an example, look at number 7. You know, he writes over there, in Aramaic, on the right side, again, Misefa mitzel anan anasi, shin reshut, dinei tum v'tayre v'achilos eifes. He has 400 pages of all the various halachas and dinim. So he writes, for example, on Chofei, he won't read the Aramaic. Trust me, it's in Aramaic, read in Hebrew. The left, right side. V'chol ha-tzipoirim asurim lona b'achila. All birds are forbidden to be eaten. Chutz ma-yoinim v'atayrim. Besides the doves. Doves are the only birds that are permitted. Why? Sh'nehem ha-reitzel noyach. It says by noyach. V'yikach mikol ha-beim ha-tayrim mikol ha-ifator. V'yalo ilus b'amizbeach. And it says, noyach took from all the animals. And from all the birds. And he brought an oil on the mizbeach. V'noyach lo hikriv oilo. And Noyach only brought an oilo. Rak mashar oilo. Clearly only what can be brought in the oilo. 400 years later, in the time of the Mishkan. Shenema v'yal oiles b'mizbech. V'ilo yekaisa v'yal b'mizbech ha'edailoi. It says v'yal b'mizbech is one thing. Olam dikdik, it says v'yal oiles. Why does it say v'yal oiles? L'diacho to tell you, ki lo hikriv noich oilo, rak mashro oilo oilo. It says v'yal oiles is only an oilo. V'lo yimotzonu mashiel al oilo b'oifois, and all things can be brought as an oilo, is rak atoirim v'ayoinim shenema. V'yemin oif oilo kabonoi. So the whole lumbus to show, and you can look at his book. Everything, Fadrate lumbus makes up new things. Literally, look at the most famous thing of the Karaim is what? The most famous halacha that the Karaim have. That it says in the Torah, Leitzavaru eish b'chol mosh v'seichem b'yayim ha-shabbos. What does that mean? That you can't light a fire. So the Karaim means, that means you can have hot food and you can have light lit on the fire. They sit in the dark, right? We know that halacha is not like that. Look at number 6. That's, by the way, the same thing. The print was better over here, but you can find it. I can show it to you in the same Sefer HaKaraim, Sefer HaMitzvah La'anan Hanossi Shin Reish Yud. But look at number 6. Ki lo yeh rashoi l'adlik l'neir l'admin l'schamen l'asla meduro. You want to tell me you can't have a fire on Shabbos? Talmud Lema, the way we paskin, like Savaru Eish B'chomash V'Zechem, Yem HaShabbos. B'Yem HaShabbos, on Shabbos, I'ato Mavi Inal to light a fire. Aval Ato Mavi, you'll have to light a fire, Me'erev Shabbos, Le'erev Shabbos. Another, you'll have to light it before Shabbos, no problem. Al-Kein Lefanein HaMakor, Rishon Shechazal B'Hedrash, Yochol, Bo, Lohitzim HaShita, Yidu HaShor HaShamgrim V'Akutim, V'Achem HaKoreim, Adiyem HaZeh, Shemafash HaMakor. Another, we say, like Savaru Eish B'Yem HaShabbos, means you can't light the fire on Shabbos, but you can have a fire lit on Shabbos. Leitzavaru, you can't light the fire on Shabbos, but it may be lit from before Shabbos, right? But they learn, Leitzavaru eich b'chol mosh v'sechem, sh'osu l'adlik ne'er b'erev Shabbos, amana she'edel g'erev Shabbos. They read, Leitzavaru eich means, not that you can't light the fire, you can't have a fire lit the entire Shabbos, you can't have a hot food on the fire, you can't have a fire lit, you have to sit in the dark. Kaloima, Leitzavaru apirush, leirak atchola savaru eich, not just the beginning of the fire is forbidden, right? That's the way the Karaim learn. Now he quotes word for word. Let's read it next 6a. V'zeh loshen sefer hamitzvus la'anan shin resh yud. Right? Let's read it. Also lahadlik, Fred, you have it? 6a. Second paragraph. Yeah, afterwards. Also lahadlik eish b'shabbos. Number one, you can't light a fire in Shabbos. Va'af lahaniach, and also to leave it, shetavar me'erev Shabbos, that it should be burning from Erev Shabbos, also forbidden. Why? Shne'emar, le'savaru eish b'chomash v'sechem, b'yayim ha'shabbos. V'yim ta'ima, and if you can ask a question, she'lahadlik b'shabbos, hu she'osur. It's only forbidden to light on Shabbos, aval medlukum mechoil mutarun lanich b'shabbos, but to light it before Shabbos. It's permitted to be left on Shabbos. Kosev rachamon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu writes, le'savaru eish. Don't light the fire. Because of it, it says, also, it says another pasuk, leisasek amalacha. Shnei yisurim halalu nichtavu bois tof. Leisavaru is written with a tof, and leisasek amalacha is also written with a tof. Why they're both written with a tof? Leidiacha to teach you. Shekemoy amalacha shekotzav leisase. Just like it says, don't do on Shabbos.
Make a hekesh.
Make your own hekesh. Tough and tough. It's ridiculous. Afim hischil babuchol kodesh chal Shabbos. It says don't do malach on Shabbos even if you started before Shabbos. You may not continue doing work on Shabbos. So chulish boiz malach, you have to stop working. Kech gam bevavor eish shikasa boi leisavaru with the tough. Afim avor eisav bechol kodesh chal Shabbos. So chulcha boisa, because both of them written with the tough makes a new hekesh. L'chein osel lan naniach beineu bein kol eish be'erev Shabbos b'chol beis Yisrael ad kan. And by the way, you can see it in its original Aramaic version. I can show it to you just like I showed you over here. Literally, the lumbus over here, and he has like this. Literally, whole thing about tzitzis, that a woman cannot make the tzitzis but could put it onto the beged, and he has another hekesh and a mamatzinu and dosh and smuchais. Literally, drushes that we have in our Gemara and Hekesh and Mamotinus and Shnei Ksuvim Boim Ke'echot, all that. No, the Gemara way of learning, he makes it up as he goes along for their own set of laws of the Karaim. That's That's what, yeah, this in Hebrew. The Aramaic is a little harder, but it's written.
But
it may, literally made up. And that's what became of Anan. Why? Because he was overlooked. The rabbi said, his shittas are a little bit off. We're not appointing him, not a goyim, and not even a Reish Galusa. We're going to his younger brother, thrown into jail, saved by the Muslim Ibn Hanufa, who became the head of some Sunni group as well. And he said, okay, become Reish Galusa, become a new religion. And that was the beginning. That was the foundation of the Karaites. Now, there were others that took it further from there, but literally, it's mind-boggling. Yeah, I can show you 300 pages. Every halacha, all walks of life. They're very big on Nida, Tzitzis, Tefillin, they did not believe in. Sukkah, they did not believe in. You got rid of a bunch of things. They don't go to doctors. Rapa Yerape has a hope shot. Why you're not allowed to go to doctors? You have to take off your shoes. A lot of Arabic stuff. Muslim, take off your shoes when you go to shul. He has another pasuk that he made up. Literally, you know, the, another big thing. Pikuach Nefesh is not doiche any mitzvah. In other words, Shabbos and Pikuach Nefesh, Shabbos take precedence. Because that's how they learned it. And he shows it in the psukim and he makes it up, literally makes it up. That is the head of the Karoim. Now if you look at number 5, for example, it is actually Rav Netunoi Goyin talks about the Karaites, how they had the Haggadah. When they did the Haggadah, they said, Avodim inu l'parah Mitzrayim, that they did say. But Mitchilo ev de'avod izorah, they skipped. And they only set certain parts in Haggadah. It's actually quite fascinating. Let's read it together what he writes. V'chein omar Rav Netunoi Goyin, reich mesifte, mishoyim b'kiddush ha-pesach, asher kiddush yisrael, ukshogoyim b'rin manishtano. First you make kiddush. Then when you finish manishtano, you don't say Avodim inu l'parah. And you don't say Mitchilo. But he right away say V'yom Yishuol Kolom V'yakov Anov Yod Mitzrayim, which is what we do, but he skipped the first part. And then you say Baruch Shoyim Me'atzei Ulamad. And then you say Aram Yoyvid Ovi Ashikim Espar Shekula Psukim Hashem. You don't say Medrash, you just read the Psukim. You don't say the Medrash like we say, you know, Mitzuyonim, etc., etc. Just read the actual Psukim of Aram Yoyvid Ovi V'yom Yerem Gamriel Ashe Galon of Ahalel Tema Godol B'dover. That's very surprising to skip out half the Haggadah. Misha Noig Minazeh, whoever does this minik, clearly you're not yotze. Elakom b'shoisikain. Not only that, you're not yotze the mitzvah. Minhu, he's apikurus. V'chalug levu, and his heart is split in the wrong direction. V'koyfim divrei chachamizal. Look how strong he writes. The boyze divrei mishnah v'talmud. He goes against the mishnah and the gemara and the talmud and agada. Can't do that. V'chayovin kol hakolas l'nadoy shelavdila mikal yisrael. You have to separate from these people. How can you skip Avodim Yinu Lefara b'Mitzrayim? Big deal. So you skip part of the Haggadah. You're a kofer. What's going on? Etc. Okay, goes into the whole thing. He said, why is that? Elo. See. Halolu minim umaligin uboizin divrei chazal. These are kofrim, Karaites. V'talmidei Anan yil kof shemoi. And these are talmidim of Anan. May his name be cursed. Avi Aviv Shal Daniel, Chuta Meshulish Bereshav Aminus, Sha'om Alachol Atoim Vazenam Achov, he told all the people, Izvu Divrei Mishnah V'Talmud, forget about the rabbis, forget about the Mishnah, forget about the Tanoim, forget about the Amoraim, Ani Yaseh Lechem Talmud Mishali, I'm going to give you my Gemara and my Talmud, V'Dainim B'Tuson, and they're still continuing their ways, V'Nasu Uman Atzmon, and they became their own nation with their own laws, V'Tikein Talmud Shal Rosho, Vishal Oval Atzmoy, he made his own Gemara. V'rom Aron of Ravina Lezaluf, the Minaspaim is safer to Eva Shaloi. And he, I guess, Rav Amram did not read it himself, like we're worse, you know. Rav Amram didn't read it. I showed it to you, maybe I shouldn't have shown it. Rav Amram says, I didn't read it, but my friend, Elozer Aluf de Minaspamyo, the great going from Aspamyo, he saw safer to Eva Shaloi, his evil, disgusting, vile book. Shikoyrin oisoi, Sefer Mitzvahs. I just showed you the Sefer Mitzvahs of Anam. Shemu Shem Yekoyf. Kamatach Bulay Seish Boy. What baloney they have over there. What kind of idiotic things. V'achshav Tzichim Nandoysa. Now you got a Thibun and Cherim. Shalai Spalim Yisrael Beis HaKnesses. Make sure and Damu with them. U'lavdilom. And separate from them. U'mekamash Nekim Yisrael Yeshivas. And until they accept upon themselves the minik of the two goyim in yeshivas, shekomi sheinim minizeh, lo yisechav osoi, because these are the kofrim, these are the Karaites, these are all Anan's people. I smell people don't do the Haggadah correctly. That's what it is. Because the Karaites, and they're following the new Talmud and the new thing, and he became the head of the Karaites. Now, we can discuss more about the Karaites. They become a very powerful force in the 900s, thousands. Then in the Middle Ages, they fall apart, even though today there's still a Karaite community in Israel.
They're an insulated community.
They're an insulated community only because they're not there. Because as much as they separate, you know, they say we have our own tradition, but you can't marry Jews. Jews, their shechit is no good.
They don't marry Arabs either.
They don't marry Arabs, they don't marry Jews. They only marry amongst themselves.
Exactly. Where do they live? There's a bunch. There's actually one.
They have a whole group of them, I think 20,000, in one of the cities in Israel.
Yeah.
One of the cities in Israel, I remember I was in the Beis Din, and there was a Karaite couple came with a Karaite ksuva, and they came for a get, because the get can only be done by the Rabbanut in Israel. And the Shlomo Fisher looked at me and says, the Karaim, the ksuva of a Karaite. You know, the smell is from far away. But these are the Karaites, started by Anan. I just want to say one more thing.
But how did they survive till now?
How did they survive? They talk among themselves. Well, how did Jews survive? How did some sect in the middle of Assyria survive?
Jews survive by moving.
And they moved, I guess, they stayed in Babel. Maybe they dressed, they were like Arabs. They did a lot of Arab things also, right? They did Arab things.
They do have some Arab things.
You see, even in their laws, they take off their shoes. They're more Jew than Arab, correct. But it started by the son or the grandson of the former Reish Lusa that was overslided and overlooked because his deus were deus kaisvais. Now, what we learn in history, whatever happens, then fast forward it, and the same things happen again. Right? No. The three cases that come to mind. In England. No. In England, there was a person called Louis Jacobs. And Louis Jacobs, I think that Louis Jacobs. He was an Iluy in Gates of Yeshiva. And he was hoping to become the next chief rabbi of England. And they took instead Chief Rabbi Brody. Chief Rabbi Brody became the next chief rabbi of England. And he was upset, it was overlooked, and he started the Masoreti movement, which is basically the conservative movement in England, started by Louis Jacobs, which was an Ilui from Gates of Yeshiva. He had smicha from the Gates of Rav, and he was overlooked for being chief rabbi, started the Masoreti movement. My father told me, there's another fellow in Amsterdam, before the war, after the war, there was a fellow called Soetendorp. Amsterdam, they never had reform, only had Orthodox. Never had reform, everybody was part of the Orthodox community. If you're not religious, you're still part of the Orthodox. There's only one community for 400 years, one killer. They didn't have the Hungarians, which had reform, and the Neologan, not like the Germans. Amsterdam was the only Western European country that never had any reform or conservative killer. The reason to that is because they didn't let any rabbis from the outside become rabbis in Amsterdam. When the reform movement started, they said, unless you graduated from the seminar in Amsterdam, you cannot become rabbi in Amsterdam, which in a way cut them off from all the great, used to have the greatest Talmud Chachamim in Europe, used to be Rabbanim in Amsterdam, the Chacham Tzvi and the Meister Keach, all the group Shol Amsterdam, Binyan Ariel, and then they stopped it. And they didn't have any more the great scholars, the great Talmud, the world-renowned Talmud Chachamim. But they protected themselves that they didn't let reform in, because unless you were graduated from the seminar in Amsterdam, the Orthodox seminar, you couldn't become rabbi in Amsterdam, you couldn't have any leadership role. And that's how they stopped. Couldn't have somebody from the outside become or open a killer or become a rav in a killer. It always started with the rabbanim, right? They were a little bit left wing, and that's how they started it. So that's how they prevented it. So in Amsterdam, they never had a reform community. After the war, there was a fellow by the name of Soetendorp, and they wanted to become chief rabbi of Amsterdam, and they didn't like him. They said the shittas are a little bit left wing, didn't like it, and they chose instead chief rabbi Schuster. And he was so upset, and he said, that's it. And he opened a reform community in Amsterdam, the slighted one, the one that, exact same story. And the last story is Saul Lieberman. Saul Lieberman learned in, I think he learned in Slabodka, actually. Big Talmud Chacham, learned in Slabodka, and he wanted to become the next head of Machon Harry Fischel in Yerushalayim. And they passed him and said, no, don't like his hashkafas, a little bit too left wing. And he became the head, the halachic expert for the conservative movement, for JTS, Saul Lieberman. So what happened back then in Bavel, 1300 years ago, that he was slighted and overlooked because of his shittas, and rightfully so, because they saw that his shittas were in the wrong place, and they saw he cannot become a goyin, and not for sure not a goyin, and not even a reish galusa. They were not wrong, they were 100% right. And he ended up becoming the head of the karoyim. The same things happen 1500 years, 1300 years later, nothing changed. It's just, you know, different circumstances, different people, different countries, but it's the exact same thing. And I think that's a very, you know, fascinating lesson that we see that took place then and takes place now as well.
He's been doing like a crazy thing.
following these people.
Yeah, well, that's not surprising.